When you hear the term sex toys, what exactly comes to mind? I know it's quite the opening for a podcast episode, but we all know why you, humble listener, are here for this podcast, and it's not for the chaste material. Anyway, back to the question at hand. I assume what comes to your mind, as it does for mine, when someone mentions the word sex toys are silicone dicks of variable sizes with throbbing veins threading up the shafts. Brightly colored and abstract-shaped vibrators that look more like alien technology than anything sexually stimulating. And gape-mouthed fleshlights that discerningly appear like detached women's body parts. Though the sex toys, like I just mentioned, can range artistically between realism and uncanny valley, they are just that, sex toys. They are sold in plastic packaging with no further context needed to market them beyond sexual pleasure. Buy now, orgasms later, hopefully. But what if sex toys were to incorporate more? To lean into fantasy specifically and sell more than just pleasure, but an associated excitement, titillation, and taboo. Something like ridges, tentacles, writhing tongues, knots, and even internal egg laying. Take the formidable sex toy company Bad Dragon, for example. Founded in 2008, Bad Dragon has been making fantasies real through the production of customizable fantasy sex toys. That's a direct quote from their About Us page. To quote them further, Bad Dragon's main mission is to do their part in making fantasies real for individuals who want to indulge in their fantasies a little deeper. That includes, but is not limited to, kaiju dildos, dragon muzzle fleshlights, squirting sea dragon cocks, dalian packers, and even their own personal lubricant, which they call Cumloop. Today, I am delighted I get to talk to you about the tantalizing and sometimes downright daunting industry of monster sex toys. I had the joy of interviewing two monster sex toy companies, Creature Feature Toys and Dark Path, to pick their brains about the industry of sex toys and its intersection with monstrous desire. So sit down, strap in, and strap on if needed. Because we're not going to be talking about the monsters hiding beneath your bed, but the one perhaps stowed away in your bedside table. That hand belonged to an amphibian, Mark.
One that spent a great deal of time in the water. We can be sure of one thing. Whatever it was very powerful.
My first interview was with Peach, the co-owner of Creature Feature Toys, a queer fantasy adult toy business based on the East Coast.
My name is Peach. I go by Peach. My pronouns are she, they. I'm one of the founders of Creature Feature Toys. I have a background in creative writing and, of course, a love of monsters.
So I'd love to ask, what inspired you to create specifically monster sex toys? Like, what is your relationship to monsters?
Yeah, so we, as in Fuzz and I, Fuzz is my partner. We've been partners for a very, very long time, high school sweethearts and everything. We've always loved creating characters and stories and, you know, all things monster and media. We've always had an interest in fantasy toys as well and had our own ideas for, like, stories and creating ideas. And with our good friend Arifri, we started Creature Feature Toys in 2020. I'd say, like, our relationship with monsters, you know, monsters can be whatever you want them to be. It's kind of fulfilling to create unique shapes that don't fit in a box. For Fuzz specifically, it's being able to create gender affirming toys as well. For me, you know, my fascination with monsters and is, like, you know, kind of how the world views them and how they relate to, like, a queer identity. Bringing back, like, creative writing. In a creative writing class, I was recommended to read Grendel by John Gardner to kind of, like, delve more into the sympathetic monster trope, because I guess they noticed I used that a bit. Exploring feeling, you know, othered by the world and how it relates to how queer people feel othered. But at the end of the day, monsters are also just a lot of fun to work with when it comes to creating fantasy toys.
Oh, absolutely. The sky's the limit. I mean, exactly. It's fantasy. It's fiction. It could be anything that you want it to be.
Yeah, exactly.
So what are some of the most popular monster sex toys that you have, and why do you think that is specifically?
Yeah, so some of our most popular toys, I'd say we have Cyrus the Werewolf, Mirage the Mimic, and Artemis the Dragon. I'd say these are familiar creatures, common in monster media that, you know, people can relate to, and it's, you know, a good, you know, entry level monsters for exploring the world of monster sex toys as well. And we've noticed a lot of people who order customs will often be inspired by a specific character or their own character with their colors. So I feel like there's a bit of a personal connection there as well.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that some of these monsters are kind of like gateway monsters. And I think werewolves especially, you know, I argue with some gatekeeping monster fuckers who are like, vampires aren't monsters or werewolves aren't monsters. And I'm like, well, I feel like you feel that way because they are so oversaturated within like media and the market, but that doesn't make them any less monsters.
It's like, it's still one of us.
Yeah. Like, all right, let's pump the brakes.
Yeah.
Very fascinating. I think also dragons right now are having a moment as they're entering into mainstream, I feel.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I feel like as someone whose business is built upon like monsters and trends and using that for marketing, you kind of have to watch all of these things happen.
Yeah.
So that actually kind of works perfectly with our next question, which is, do public trends affect the molds you make? Like, if werewolves or aliens are big at the moment, do the toys that you make fit those interests, or do you make toys independent of those cultural trends?
Yeah, so that's a pretty good question. It's like a sometimes answer, since the creation process is pretty labor intensive, especially for us in the beginning. We're one of the few like indie sex toy shops that mainly sculpt from clay than 3D print, although Whoa. We do a bit of both. Yeah. We're kind of dipping our toes into 3D printing now, but all the ones you see behind me are started from clay hand sculpting. It takes a lot of time to sculpt and polish. It's something that, you know, Fuzz specifically enjoyed. Our day jobs at the time were all, you know, on computers. So it's like away from the computer. I want to, you know, go back to my creative roots and do something tactile and sculpt, but it takes a bit of time to sculpt and polish, as you can imagine. But we're often inspired by media and popular monsters. For example, Xian the Oracle was inspired by Raru from the video game Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, came out around the same time as that game. And on the other hand, we have Laguna the Siren, who was inspired from like the sea monster in The Shape of Water, but that came out before we even started our store. So we like to kind of follow trends based on popular monsters, but we also follow trends by pouring, you know, colors themed after like popular media or themes, like specific colors. For example, like last November, we had a Monster Hunter themed drop where we poured a bunch of ones after the monsters. We had little free goodies like stickers that looked like Monster Hunter inspired, but really we just have so many ideas. If there are more hours in the day, we'd do them all.
How do you choose, and I guess this kind of is tangential to the question you just answered, but how do you choose which mold you're going to make next?
Right, so we kind of have a long list of ideas that grows faster than what we can create. So it's sort of a combination of, if we notice a gap in our catalog, like with a type of toy or a shape, like for instance, you know, penetrables, we're missing those right now. We would love to make more of those for people with different anatomy. And then we're also inspired by maybe, you know, our monster of the week we're interested in designing in, which can be inspired by movies and games, or if someone on the team has a specific idea. And so we tend to combine those two of like a need and a want, if you will, like combine those together, and that's going to be our next toy.
Right. I feel like with the culture at large always kind of being obsessed with monsters, it's a never-ending untapped market to tap into. Like, I know that Frankenstein is being remade again, but with like only like hot actors, and it's by Guillermo del Toro, who is a notorious monster fucker. And so I feel like, you know, moments like this is like, oh, clearly our next toy is going to be Frankenstein. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels like it really just writes itself.
Yeah, we have a long, long list that I'm like, I want to get to all of these one day. Hopefully we can.
What are your favorite toys to make?
Okay, so for me, it's kind of a good question. So my personal favorite changes kind of depending on the coloration. I actually have like one of my favorite pours right here, our Wishing Star pour.
Peach holds up the Toy Mirage, which is a set of open jaws with a girthy, protuberant tongue sticking out. This one in particular is part of CFT's Wishing Star collection, in which the toys are painted with white stars and crescent moons against a gradient of shimmering pastel colors of baby pink, blue, purple, and pale green.
That's one of my favorite pours, but I am biased towards Calliope the Enchanted. Actually is one of my favorite toys to pour because of just it wears everything well, the shape is beautiful, and it's a familiar, like, approachable first fantasy toy.
Calliope is a dildo based off of and named after a Capricorn creature with a gentle spiraled shaft, a raised decorative base, and a Prince Albert piercing in its head.
We recently did a Valentine's Day blog where everyone on the team picked out their favorite toy with a little information about each model to see if it's like a match. So if anyone's interested in seeing like what everybody else's picks are, you can go to our blog.
That's so cute. That's such a great idea.
Yeah, we're like, oh, Valentine's Day. Here's, you know, your little date pick, you know, I think that'd be fun. But we do just always have new favorites as we create new toys. There's really just so many pours you can do and so many models you can create that it's like, how can I pick?
Who is your clientele base, if you are privy to that information, such as, you know, are your customers varied in demographics, age, gender, sexuality, or do you even have a majority demographic?
So we sort of see a couple of niche communities that are our primary like clientele base. Although we have seen growth outside of these groups, I'd say recently in the past year or two, our top customers would be in like an indie toy collector community, sex workers, and actually the furry community as well. All of these communities are pretty varied demographically, but they do all, you know, skewer towards queer and trans folks, I've noticed. So I think a lot of people relate to fantasy toys and gravitate towards us for those reasons as well.
Yeah, and I think a lot of your products also showcase that. You market like Packers or gender euphoric toys, and I think that would showcase that you obviously have a demographic that is asking for that.
Yeah, and we're always looking for ways to provide more for those sort of underserved communities as well.
Do you find that monstrosity allows you to push the boundaries of design and customer pleasure? So like, for example, having spines, rigids, knots, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, even with some of our more humanoid designs like Xian the Oracle, Artemis the Dragon, Calliope the Enchanted, they all still like push boundaries with exaggerated and like unrealistic curves, ridges, and swells. You know, as with monsters, sky's the limit, or like, you know, what's possible to engineer with silicone is kind of the limit. But that's
right. Whatever Fuzz can make with molding clay.
Exactly. So we love using monstrosity to add unique features to make a design more appealing. And some of the things that might seem unapproachable, like, you know, ridges and spikes, or even they are actually a lot softer in the silicone that we use as a fantasy toy company. We use a much softer grade than I'd say most mainstream companies do.
Many sex toy companies use the Durometer Shore Hardness Scale, aka the Shore Scale, to measure the firmness of the material. Shore 00, for example, measures only soft silicone, whereas Shore A measures hardness. For CFT, they offer silicone in Shore 0020, very soft, 0030, soft, 0050, medium, and 10A, firm.
So it's a lot squishier, approachable than it seems.
So that decision was purposeful, because did you find that prior to the creation of CFT, did you hear often or feel yourself that it felt unapproachable?
Yeah, I'd say with a lot of mainstream toys, the shapes are usually a lot more streamlined, and they typically tend to use firmer firmness of silicone, for better word. And I feel like a lot of people, you know, have different tastes, and with toys that are bigger and with more texture, especially having softer silicone makes it far more approachable than if it were to be as firm as like a mainstream toy. I feel like it would be a lot more
I mean, just already out the gate, CFT and other companies use soda cans as like size reference. And that was the first time I've ever seen that used, as like, you know, people are always like banana for size reference. Like, no, soda can for size reference is, when you first see it, so intimidating. You're like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Soda can? And then you see that it goes beyond soda can, and you're like, oh my God. Like, so I think there's something to be said about like, it needs to be able to give and be soft. Elsewise, that's just a lot.
Yeah, of course, it's everybody's has different preferences. And so we try to have something for everyone. We do offer some firmer firmnesses, but we go all the way down to our super soft firmness, which that's what this one is in. You can see it just like completely squishing.
I noticed that some of your toys feature illustrations of the creatures they belong to. And it makes me think that you are selling more than just a toy, but also a fantasy that is tied to like a personalized creature. You even include like little snippets about the creature.
Here, for example, is a snippet of Calliope's character description. Through the mist at the abandoned fairgrounds, a faint organ tune echoes. The notes sound off-key, echoing like a distorted memory of a light-hearted melody. From the shadows, a pair of glowing eyes appear. As the music increases in volume, the glow bulbs stutter to life along the rails and structure of the carousel. The stage is alive, with Calliope at its center.
Do you find that personalizing / tying the toys to a concrete creature helps sales? Or is this more just like a fun twist for your brand?
Yeah, so that's a pretty good question. It's a bit of a yes and no answer. So I've heard on one hand, some people care mostly about like the shape of the toy and like the pour, the colors that are on it, more so than the character and the lore. But I've also heard people that enjoy the characters and stories, they say they relate to them on a personal level. They like enjoy seeing the characters on our branding. And, you know, we do have plans to do more with the characters, because personalizing the characters is like definitely a fun twist for our brand and important to us as creatives as well. And we'd love to do more like with games, maybe more stories and, you know, fun merch like character themed underwear with our sister business Talons.
Oh,
shameless
no.
plug right there.
But, yeah. I've noticed that it really feels like there's this fantasy that is just not included whatsoever when you're looking at like human toys being sold. You know, a human toy, it just is. Whereas it feels like there's this whole fantasy that's enriching this experience of this toy and like further titillating it, I suppose.
Yeah, I'd say like even like more of a, I'd say I've seen in like the industry in general, even just, you know, calling something, you know, a mermaid based toy, even if you don't have like a character art or story, it does intrigue people who are interested in mermaids. They're like, oh, a mermaid toy, like I gotta have that one, you know, I love mermaids. So, you know, having that fantasy and being able to like, you know, project more of like your own fantasies onto it is kind of the part of monster toys that's important, at least especially for us.
Yeah, I was especially thinking about, like, for example, right now I know that you said dragons and werewolves are kind of taking a forefront. And even if you didn't sell a story attached to, say, a werewolf toy or a dragon toy, it's so big right now that you wouldn't really have to. There are other people are bringing in the associations that they have with the stories or the media that they're consuming that's drawing them towards this toy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you find that the rising popularity of erotic monsters in culture has created an increased interest in your products seen through purchasing trends? I know that you said that CFT came about in 2020, so this would be a 3-year time span. I don't know if that's long enough for you to start seeing trends, but I'm curious nonetheless.
Yeah, so to give a little background, so we started Creature Feature Toys in 2020 during, you know, lockdown. A lot of people were bored and looking for ways to entertain themselves, and You know, we do notice when certain models pick up attention in the community because of either its features or like a specific coloration. But I'd say overall, we know to just, it's always good to pour more Cyrus the Werewolf, because werewolves are very popular in like a variety of forms of monster like media. Always has been, always will.
Always, yeah.
I would say like if we had started Creature Feature Toy earlier, prior to 2020, I may have personally felt more like anxiety and fear of like judgment for what we create, when now in 2024, I feel like the desire for monsters has become more normalized and more people are curious and understand where we're coming from. So I guess that's how I'd seen like an increased interest over the years. And I'm interested to see where it goes from here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's fascinating. So Vice did an episode on monster attraction as well in 2018. And it was on the series Slut Ever, I believe it's called. And so in the episode, the interviewer, she talks to a monster romance sex toy business that was selling ovi positioners, so like egg laying toys. And you know, the whole time she was shocked about this whole thing, and I think it's so funny watching that now, being like, yeah. that's pretty mainstream, like,
yeah, it's on our list of things to do, actually. So we may have a master, like a resin coffee master in our workshop right now getting worked on for that. So
I would imagine it would be similar to werewolves in that egg laying, werewolf knots, and I don't know what a third one would be, but those two come to mind when thinking of this will probably be your
Those are popular ones, always good to have around, since there's always someone interested in trying it for the first time, or just, you know, they know that's what they like, so that's what they're looking for first when they discover like a new monster sex toy brand. So
right, I see some of the toys in the background, the one that's purple and pink, one that has like the frilled, I'm super curious about the like design on that. Could you explain that?
It's an alien looking toy with a not quite shaft that appears like a semi-opened clam with frilled edges. The inside is hollow for squishing, folding, or even perhaps putting eggs inside, while the base is a solid swell and five leaves spread out in a star shape, with one leaf with a bumpy texture raised to offer stimulation.
Yeah, so this one, there's actually another toy shop, Nerd On Novelties. They closed their doors a little while ago, and we purchased a couple models from them, this being one of them. I believe this one, it's sort of an interesting thing where I believe you're supposed to be able to use it as like a stroker of sort, or you could potentially put eggs inside as well and try out that way. Yeah, it's like there's a variety of uses for it. Like there's a portion here that's like grindable as well. Like it's a very innovative and unique model that I was like, well, we have to have this one. It wears colors beautifully, and it's an interesting and new toy for us as well that we didn't previously have anything with these features.
Yeah, it's unlike anything I've ever kind of seen. And I think like monster sex toys, like, you know, you have things where you look at it and you're like, yeah, I understand how I could use that. And then there are others where I'm like, I genuinely have no idea what's going on here.
Like, yeah, and I'm like, there's also a knot here.
Yeah, like what is going on?
Yeah, it's like sometimes half the fun is like, you know, just seeing how the pour is going to turn out on it, and like what it's going to feel like in silicone versus the clay or resin master.
Do you find that the toy that you were just holding is popular?
Currently, I think most people buy it because they're curious. You haven't really had any like content demonstrating how it's used. So I think that's one reason why it's not as popular as Cyrus the Werewolf, of course, but people are interested in it, and I'm curious to see if maybe a different size or different proportion of this model would intrigue people further.
Peach holds up a Cyrus the Werewolf model. Even with it being a medium-sized toy, it's formidable at 10 inches long in total, with a usable 8 inches of length. Based off of a werewolf character, the toy has a smooth curved shaft with a sizable knot about the size of a tennis ball at the base above the testicles.
This is a bigger size, I'll tell you now. And this was one of our hand sculpted models, so that does start at like a bigger size than some of our other models would. I'd say this is maybe the medium size we have. So there are a couple sizes below. But yeah, we're working on like even smaller sizes for this model, but we do get asked for bigger. So if you believe it or not, we always get asked for bigger.
Honestly, everything about like how this industry is pushing the boundaries of people just being inordinately horny is to me
very
so amazing. It just fills me with joy, like to hear like bigger, like, all right, okay.
I know.
Good for you.
Sometimes we'll vend at in-person events sometimes, usually furry conventions, because they have good like adult dealers dens at these mm-hmm. events. We'll hear a variety of, oh, that's way too big. And then we'll hear, oh, I need bigger than that. I'm like, I don't know what to do.
I don't know how to help you.
Noting the plethora of toys behind them, I asked if Peach would show me the rest of the toys.
So this is Cozy the Reindeer, one of our equine models. This one is painted with Fossil Dig, a coloration so we kind of did. Yeah. It's like a fun little summer pour that we did where you hand-painted the little bones and the dragon. I believe Fuzz did this one.
Peach shows off Cozy, a toy based off of and named after CFT's reindeer character. It possesses a blunt, slightly flared, heart-shaped head and a thick shaft that leads to a raised ring near the base. The model Peach holds is part of CFT's Fossil Dig collection, which decorates the toys with hand-painted bones and beautiful ombre pours of pale yellow, orange, and brown.
This one's also a pretty popular model, I would say, for instance. Right. Like,
kind of leads into this one back here.
Our tentacle model, Windsor.
Windsor is a tentacle toy with a spiraled shaft that widens down to a thick base, a small rounded tip, and suckers twisting around its appendage.
You know, it's poured like a little cake. We have little confetti sprinkles all over it. This one's also super soft. This is Laguna the Siren, the one I was talking about earlier that's, you know, inspired by the sea monster of Shape of Water and just in general aquatic design. Right.
Laguna is a toy with a tapered tip, gentle curves, and a pebbly texture. The member protrudes from the base a frilled slit, which appears to mimic a portion of an aquatic creature's body.
Yeah, it's a very like friendly, approachable shape.
Yeah. Here
is Pharaoh the Alien. So it has a knot as well, similar to Cyrus the Werewolf, but there's more like geometric shapes.
Yeah. Pharaoh the Alien is a plated, geometric, bumpy piece with lots of ridges and textures. With a gently sloped shaft and a rounded tip, it appears easy enough until you get to the large knot in the center. The smallest Pharaoh toy, the Mini, possesses a knot with a diameter of 2 inches, which is a little smaller than the diameter of a soda can.
This one is soft firmness, so it's still squishy and has skin, mm-hmm. but holds its shape a bit more than super soft, I would say.
After a quick break, I'll come back to talk to Dark Path, an Australian-based business that produces not just gothic and monster-inspired toys, but BDSM candle wax and packs. Welcome back to the Monstrous Desire Study. For the second half of this episode, I had the honor of talking to
Troy from Dark Path.
And I'm Amanda from Dark Path. Dark Path is one of Australia's independent, I say sex toy manufacturers, but we do other things as well, and like our candles and paddles and stuff. Our motto for our shop is made for anybody with anybody. So we literally make everything that we can to be made for anything, anybody, any abilities, any movements, any gender, any race, any anything.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So what inspired you to create specifically monster or gothic sex toys? And I guess what is your relationship to monster/gothic?
So that's sort of like gothic, kind of a lot of our stuff is based around like gods, demons, and deities. So a lot of that aesthetic automatically falls back to myself, to be honest. You know, I have my little witchy benches and things like that floating around the house. And I think originally it wasn't so much the intention to go specifically monster-based. It was just more what options can we put out there into the universe for people that maybe don't want something that looks like a penis or is something a little bit more creative, a little bit more artistic, that they can still use for that purpose.
Yeah. And then one thing that we did look at when we first started was something that can be left out in plain sight without being known what it is. So that bit of anonymity in a sex toy as well. So not just having something that is solely a sex toy, but something that can be a decoration, that can be used not to be hidden away or to be shamed upon.
Incognito.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's one of those, if you know, you know.
Right. If you don't, then you're like, that's a neat little spider.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And if they do know, it means they know, in which case mutually assured destruction, right?
Yeah, you're both on the same corner of the internet, so.
Yep.
Pretty much.
What are some of the most popular toys that you have, and why do you think that is?
So I think my little list would be like our grinders. First off, a lot of them are really popular.
Grinders are very popular.
And I think that's because I'm seeing this wave of like a cultural influence that sex isn't always about penetration anymore. And it's really good to see that, like people kind of stepping outside of that normal societal, well, this is how it has to be kind of construct. Yeah. And then we've definitely got our Upia, which is our vampire, and Cthulhu. I think those pair are probably in the same category because they are...
two ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, well, they're close enough to something that's not too far out of the norm. And they're also like vampires, tentacles, werewolves, that type of thing is close to the top of pop culture anyway. And then there would be Hierophant, which is one of our probably more phallic-shaped ones. And I think that one's probably really popular as well because if a lot of people are taking that first step going, oh, I really want, but I'm not sure if that's going to work for me, then that's kind of that really good first step to go, oh, that's a bit fantasy. It's not too far out, but I'm going to test the waters here.
Yeah.
And then they go from there.
It's not being crazy. It's got those ridges and the bumps without being this weird, oh, no, that's definitely not a penis shape.
And then 12 months later, they have 50. Every design is different, like all the and across different creators as well, like different textures and bumps and spots in bits that wouldn't normally be hit and things like that. It's diverse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I know that one of the toys you have is, it's a cauldron and then it has like bubbles, if I'm remembering correctly, coming up. And I think that was so imaginative in the way to play with texture. I've never seen something like that where you've completely strayed from like body into something much more abstract.
Yeah. So that's Hallows. That was our first birthday release.
It was a lot. It was very different when we brought it out, because when we brought out Hallows, there wasn't really anything like that out there, especially with this one's background and everything like that. And because we were going down that path of, you know, anonymity as to what it is, it was very much a, oh, look, this is just a sculpture. And so we actually have those two fields of people that buy it. We do have those people that buy it as a toy, but then we do have those people that buy it purely as a sculpture. Yeah. With a lot of our stuff, because of the way we design it, we do get both ends of the spectrum as well. So it changes a little bit as to our customer base and everything as well. You wouldn't know, and we don't really know until later on. Sometimes we get a message from going, I love it so much. It looks so good on my mantelpiece. And we're like, oh, okay, that one was bought as a sculpture, not as a toy.
Do public trends affect the mold that you choose to make?
I think it's a little bit of, so there is like definitely, as any business should, they should be, you know, looking at what's going to be marketable, what's going to be sellable, what are people interested in right now, that sort of thing, in order for it to work and for it to sell. But also there is a big chunk of, particularly when I'm designing, because I do 90% of the designs, I sort of just go, well, I see this gap here, like, there's people that are doing something like this, but it doesn't fit quite right here. Or they're doing something like this, but I think I could do it better and make it more accessible by doing this.
Like our grinders.
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit of column A, column B kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that actually works nicely in which I was going to ask, how do you choose which mold you're going to make next? And I guess that also kind of is chosen by, you guys have a very specific aesthetic of like very gothic, very witchy. And so I would assume that you have kind of a notebook full of like, oh, I want to do like this next.
Yeah. Well, I do. I have a little page on my iPad in Procreate where, you know, as I come up with ideas or whatever, I'll just like scribble them on the page. So I do have that, but quite often some of the things like the updated Hades and the Persephone were never on that note page. They were just let's fuck around and find out kind of design.
Sometimes that works.
And it works. And I love them and they're my babies.
It works very well for me, especially if she fucks around and finds out or starts to fuck around and someone says, oh, I don't know if that's possible. That is just the words she needs to go, oh, not possible. Hold my poodle.
Flowing into that, like, do we do cultural trends and stuff? I think too, I know with our pre-order release at the moment, Poseidon, because we have just done Persephone and Hades and they are quite intricate and detailed and things, I wanted to bring in Poseidon as being a bit more traditionally shaped and being a little bit closer almost to the vibe that Hierophant gives, where it's not too far out of the normal. It's a bit of a toe step into the fantasy world without being this is a lot all at once kind of thing.
Where Ares on the other hand has those rather knotty points. So it can be can look a little bit intimidating, but you know, that kind of suits Ares at the same time.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times, especially when we design things, especially if we're designing after deities and stuff like that, Manda tries to match the toy to almost the personality of the deity. Some people try to go, how would that penis look? Where I think we kind of more go, okay, well, how can we have the toy represent the deity, not how would their penis. So we kind of go down a slightly different route of it.
And funnily enough, you can definitely see, like whether you believe or not, and that's totally okay if you choose not to, but like through the process of Hades, I could definitely see like Hades as a deity will make you work for it. Like he will push you until you think you're going to break and he'll make you fight to get over the line. And that's exactly what the Hades designs did the entire way through. So yeah, I definitely design how I would think that deities would appreciate to be perceived.
At this point, I asked Manda and Troy if they would like to show me the rest of their toys. Troy hands Manda a few toys and Manda holds them up for me to see properly. The first toy is a portion of a spinal column, a gorgeous chrome coloration of greens, blues, reds, and yellows.
So that's the original Hades. That's actually in a coloration that we haven't released yet.
Whoa.
So it's very, it's like a chrome.
Yeah.
Shift. That's original Hades. I was contemplating with the idea of letting the original Hades go when the new one came in. But, like Troy from background, nope. But I like that this original Hades, it does have the bumps and textures and things, but it's better for a beginner.
Right.
So I didn't really want to get rid of it. And then we've got Ares.
Ares is an homage to the god of war. It's a gnarled, knotted, textured piece that definitely looks like you'll have to fight it to claim it. If you get past the initial knot at the top, you'll be met with a twisted and textured shaft.
That is incredible. See, I understand why you wanted to keep the original Hades, because going from Hades to that is like, oh, we're in the big
It's a very
now.
Big jump.
And of course.
And Hallows as well.
Hallows is a much different vibe from Hades and Ares. It's a cute small cauldron with a textured, tapered plume of bubbles rising from the pot.
Who is your clientele base, if you were privy to that sort of information, such as are your customers varied in demographics, age, gender, sexuality, or do you even have a majority demographic?
Well, actually, talking about it earlier, and not really.
We don't really have a majority demographic, like, because so we do run our website through Shopify. So we have some pretty decent demographics and analytics, and it's really across the board. Like, we don't know ages so much, like obviously 18 plus, but our demographics don't really show specifically what the ages are unless they're like through social media.
Yeah.
Then we'll see ages, but it's really varied. It's really international. We do tend to have more in America than what we do in Australia.
Oh, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, so
we're slowly getting, it is slowly getting bigger in Australia, but Australia in terms of monster toys and everything like that is still kind of
still growing.
So yeah, in America and Europe, it's a lot bigger.
So you are kind of really getting in on that corner market as it grows within Australia.
I think so. I think it's definitely been sort of growing and changing and stuff. And there's a few other makers that are around in Australia now too. I think it'll be interesting to see
what future holds,
where it goes. And if it starts to look like, you know, what America looks like in terms of fantasy toys, or even like Germany, EU, stuff like that, they're a pretty big group as well. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see if Australia plays catch up or we just kind of hang out where we are. I mean, we've already got enough dangerous stuff trying to kill us 3/4 of the time anyway. So, I mean, why not have sex
with
them?
Add some more.
You know, it's a fine line, you know, fear and arousal.
That's why the spider came into the living room. Mm-hmm.
I should have put two and two together with you both being Australian and yeah. The spider. You guys have some pretty big fucking spiders, to say the least.
Yeah, I think the very first time, so Arachne, that's now like a seasonal only for Halloween's, it's like the one that won the best horror toy last year for the Bazaarweeds.
I can imagine it doing well. I mean, it fits in so well with the aesthetic of everything, of the spooky, the gothic. It makes sense completely. The fun of this, and it is, you know, a lot of creepy crawly aestheticism, but at the end of the day, a lot of it is fun. And a lot of that kind of funness is included in your descriptions that lead into the fantasy and the taboo of, like, monstrosity. So, like, the description that was for the small appear.
The upir description reads as such. As the night falls, let the upir ma take center stage in your most intimate rituals. This fantasy dildo is more than a toy. It's an embodiment of your fantasies, a conduit to unearthly pleasures that stir both body and soul. Imagine a vampire's mouth, its fangs poised to pierce the veil between reality and fantasy. The mouth's upward, pointing, flicked tongue beckons, inviting you to relinquish control and give in to your deepest cravings.
It appears that you're selling more than just sex toys, but you're also selling the fantasy and sometimes the taboo that comes along with it. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, so I think it really sort of comes down to, like, as a business, what are the customers looking for? Well, they look, say, with upir, they're probably going for upir because they like the fangs and the tongue and the vampire vibe and stuff like that. So then actually feed into that and sort of help paint that kind of fantasy in their brain, which ultimately from a marketing perspective helps to fuel the purchase, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of smart, well, attempted smart marketing, because you do want to create that mental connection to the item that you're buying, especially when it is an item like what we do, where 99% of what we do is all custom. So you can then have that image in your head of this particular vampire, and then you can go, shit, I can pick my colors. I want this color and this color and this color here, and this is how I want it, and I want, you know, drips here and blah 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 blah. And then immediately it goes from their head when they've read the description and start to having that picture. Once they receive it, it reignites that and continues that for them. Yep. So they're actually able to fulfill then that fantasy that they have in their mind with what they've received.
It seems like it's a common thing, I think, when we're talking about fantasy toys. A lot of people lean into that fantasy, whether it's the inclusion of illustrations of whatever creature it's supposed to be a part of, or in your instance, you have a very rich description that goes with it. It's not just like this belongs to, you know, this creature. It's about, you know, vampire's mouth and fangs poised to pierce the veil of reality and fantasy.
I like the idea that, yes, like pictures and stuff can emote, but I think when somebody can read it, then they're going to picture it in their mind how it suits them. So what I might picture when I read upir would be something very different that you might picture in your head when you read upir. So it kind of doesn't place a restriction on that's what this vampire looks like. It's like, no, this can be however you want it to look like. And then they can customize their colors.
What you want more is something to be evoked than to be perceived.
Yeah. And particularly, like, as our toys, if they're taken care of, they can last forever. Any platinum cure silicon, not just ours, but any properly done platinum cure silicon toy, if taken care of, you could be buried with it, right? It will outlast your remains. Interesting coffin, but
oh, there's so many ideas.
it would outlast you. So you kind of want, if someone is putting the money into something like that, and particularly for something that can last a long time, you want them to have a connection to that item.
Yeah, absolutely. I think half of it also is with, you know, desirous and erotic monsters now more taking a forefront within mainstream media in whatever way that people consume it, whether it's video games, mm-hmm. movies, TVs, books, comics, whatever.
Yeah.
Books. I think that they're bringing with them that associated desirability as well. So, I mean, already half of that pressure is being lifted off your shoulders because they already know what they want.
Yeah. That's probably pretty evident, actually, because, you know, a lot of the time when we do get orders, we do get people saying, oh, I want colors based on this character, or I want colors based on this character.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very normal for us to get.
Any character in specific that, like, really pops out of your mind right now about, like, oh, we get this Venom.
Prince Sidian.
But Venom.
Venom, yeah, very much so.
Very consistent. Understandably.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah. I'd run him around the corner. But yeah.
What color schemes would that be? Black and red or black and green? No, what is
black,
his color?
Black, white, red, and maybe sometimes a tint of blue. It depends if they're going for, this is where it gets interesting. It depends if they're going for movie accurate or comic accurate. Because there's all the different variations between. And a lot of people are very specific with what they want. So they'll say to you, oh, I want it to represent Venom, but I want it to represent the early 2000s comic Venom.
Yeah, not which is Tom different Hardy.
From later 2000s or current. And it's like, okay, then it's research time.
Amanda, you're a qualified sexologist and kink educator. Mm-hmm. Could you describe, perhaps in your own words, why people are so obsessed with, you know, monster sex toys and how it can relate to kink?
Relating to kink, there is a yes, it does for some people. And then there is also a bunch of people that no, it doesn't. It's just something different. It's not necessarily a, by definition, kink. And other people, it does. And whichever category I think people fall into, as long as, you know,
They're happy
and there's no non-consent or anything like that involved in any situations that's involved in, rock on. I think from a sexology standpoint, we're definitely, like I mentioned with the grinders and things, we're definitely hitting that point as a society where, you know, all us elder millennials, the burnt out gifted and talented kids, are just going, we're done. Like, we're standardized bullshit and we know things can be better and we know that things can be different and it doesn't always have to be A plus B equals C. Like, it could be a little bit more fun if we include D in that equation.
And I can do this shit myself.
People are starting to pick that up and go, well, okay, grinders are a thing. Then they go, oh yeah, that's really cool. I like the idea of the maw, so being the tongue and the fangs and stuff. Oh, I can have that. That's really cool. Let's test those waters. Cthulhu with the tentacles and stuff. Oh, that kind of seems really cool. Let's test those waters. And I think it's becoming much more common now than it was, say, 20 years ago, as us sort of elder millennials have come through and just gone, fuck it, we don't want to conform anymore. And that's fair.
I think, too, on the kink side of it, like, you have certain toys which would appeal more to the kinks, like the body shifter ones.
Mm-hmm.
Egg laying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can very much appeal. We've got, what is it called? Gluttony. Not gluttony.
Gluttony. Well, yeah, no, gluttony too. And I guess that also borders online whether gluttony could fall into a kink or a not kink.
Yeah,
so gluttony is the knotted wearable with the grinder pad on it. That turns either a toy or your partner, if you choose to have one, into a werewolf. Like, it turns them into that. Right. So you can then draw not just that fantasy of going, well, I can read the werewolf shifter books and then I have a toy like that. It's like, no, I can read the werewolf shifter books and then my part can do that with me. It broadens that kind of fantasy area and enables more people to engage in it. But I think that kind of, again, borders on a bit of both kink or not kink as well, because like knotting and things like that could potentially fall more to the kink side of things. I think it's really open and I think that's the best way for it to be.
I think a large part comes down to your definition of kink.
I think when I say kink, like specifically the breeding kink, for example, is very popular amongst like monster eroticism. And that can be brought up in a variable of different ways. You know, with egg laying toys, for example, with like, I know some companies, you can get them to like actually squirt like lube.
Cum tubes.
Right. And yeah. A large part of that is integrated into the designs of these toys. And so it's interesting to me to think about the way that monstrosity and its design pushes perhaps the landscape of pleasure.
I think that's part of the, like Amanda was saying before, where it can be perceived in either kink or non-kink. And I think that's where a lot of that difficulty lays. I guess it's saying that we don't like really putting any of those labels on anything. Don't want anyone to feel ostracized about using anything. And having anything made for anybody of anybody kind of means for us that doesn't matter what it is, doesn't matter what you're into, doesn't matter what where you come from, what your background is.
Right.
Hopefully we have something that will make you happy.
Or we're working on something.
Always working on something.
The term kink in itself can hold a lot of negative connotations for a lot of people, or it could hold a lot of trauma weight for a lot of people. And I think that's sort of why I am really careful about going, oh, yes, this is definitely a kink. I can go, yeah, I'm pretty sure it does fall into that. But yeah, I'm always careful about it because I don't want people to feel ostracized or feel the weight of that or go, oh, I didn't think that that was a kink and oh, I'm not a bad person because it holds so much weight for some people. So hopefully in the future as a society, we'll be able to break some of those social constructs and societal expectations and just be able to have people be free.
Yeah.
As long as it's safe, sane, and consensual or risk aware, then
rock on.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very healthy approach, I think. And for our sadly last question, did you notice that monster sex toys were getting popular when you created Dark Path?
No.
So it was just kind of jumping into that.
Yep. So when we created Dark Path, it was actually primarily because of candles.
Right,
because
so a lot of it is you have a section for BDSM and candle wax.
Yeah.
So we've been part of the BDSM kink community for like 10, 11 years. And we do run our own event space as well because Dark Path's not enough of a problem. Apparently we had to do something else. And yeah, but when we sort of got really into candles and stuff, which I got very into candles, and a lot of the things on the market were too high for my skin or they irritated my skin, you know, or they used random ingredients that just weren't good for your skin. And of course, my skin being the sensitive Sally it is, would pick up on that. So Troy's gone, oh, well, I think I can make candles for us. So he did that and put together, like worked with a few of the kink elders.
8 months later.
For a while. Took him 8 months to get the recipe right, how he wanted it. And then we were actually putting together the website for Dark Path for the candle. And I can still remember as plain as day, like Troy sitting on the lounge. I was sitting like two seats up and I kind of looked at him and gone, what if we did like dildos and stuff too? That could maybe be okay. Like there was only one kind of maker at the time in Australia that was doing anything like that. And they were nowhere near like the aesthetic. And then when we came into the scene, we weren't where we are now.
No.
And so I went and figured out how to make the matrix molds that we do and the gloves to go in them and how to do all that so there wouldn't be any seams and stuff, and redid everything that we do. And since then, we've just gotten more and more complex with how we do things. But I think, yeah, it's important that people understand that it's a lot of work.
It is.
Like it's taken us 3 years to get to this point. And
it's been a crazy fucking 3 years.
And we've struggled in the beginning and we learned and we had our ass handed to us. And that's how you fix it. Like that's how you get better.
If you'd like to listen to the full interviews with Creature Feature Toys and Dark Path, where you can see both of their beautiful and wonderful toys, you can do so by going to the Monstrous Desire Study blog. I will include links both here and on my website to both businesses' websites. So if any of this piqued your interest, please go ahead and give them both a visit. Special thanks go out to Creature Feature Toys, especially Peach, and Amanda and Troy from Dark Path, all of whom took the time out of their very busy schedules to talk to me. As always, thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time, Monster Fuckers.